This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, number 136. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
And you can call us on
020-88-167-691.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. This week I want to talk a little bit about some coaching aids that have made their way around. Of course, this show is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, and Pitch Vision is very dear to our hearts, the ball tracking system. But I want to start with something a little bit simpler on the show this week, and that's the sidearm. The dog ball thrower that's designed for cricket balls. What do you think of the sidearm, Harris?
I love it because it takes the pressure off my shoulder. And having been somebody who was a throw-down man to Vaughan, Peterson, Collingwood and Strauss, every day was a bit of a challenge. I have to say that first throw always felt a little bit as if I didn't want to throw too many more, but I wasn't given that option. So I think it's an invaluable piece of kit. I'd go for the higher option. There's two sorts. I'd go for the higher option if it works within your bracket, because it's got more durability in it for my liking. But yeah, I mean, it's like any bit of kit, you've got to master it. And you look around now and there's some people that are getting really good at it and starting to bowl spin and slower balls and all sorts. And I think it's an invaluable bit of kit, certainly in my kit bag, that is for sure.
Bernard, have you ever had a go on one of those?
Yeah, I have. Like Gareth said, you've got to master it. My first one went straight at the bloke's head and nearly killed him. But yeah, they are. I can see exactly if you're doing that on a regular basis, it really does save your shoulder. No tennis elbow with the slinger.
I think it's important with any bit of kit to get practicing before you work with anybody. And as Bernard said, I've seen some horror stories with that particular bit of kit. But, you know, bottom line is it's the same as going out to have a practice before a match. You go into a net and you just chuck 100 balls and get a bit of a feel for it. And I certainly don't throw it exactly the same as I would do if I was throwing the ball normally. I've got a slightly different technique for it, which you have to master to get all the skills out.
What do the players think of it? Is it significantly different from getting throwdowns or facing a bowler?
I think the players like it. They certainly like it from me because I'm only 5'6". So trying to simulate somebody like a Kirtley Ambrose was never quite so easy for me. So I think it gives that extra little bit of bounce and probably makes it a little bit more realistic.
And do you do the little walk in first and then throw? Is that the technique to it?
Well, there's so many, and I'd say people that are far better than me at it can do that. For me, I don't really flick the ball out, and I find that I get enough pace on it, more than enough pace on it, and I'm fairly chest on when I throw it. But then I watch people like Phil Simmons and some of the county coaches around that have probably done it a little bit more than me, and they've got their usual throwing style, and they get the ball to go out really, really well. But for me, I just stand there and flick it out, and it goes out at more than enough pace. That's what I'm being told by the players that I'm throwing at, anyway.
While I was in the West Indies, I saw Trevor Penny, who was doing it with the Indian boys, and he literally took a couple of paces when he was doing it to, I think it was Yusuf Patel, would it be? He did a couple of paces down the pitch, and then he basically went at right angles, because more times than not, it was whizzing straight back past his head. And I could literally imagine it must be an occupational hazard not getting hit, because some of these guys, the bat he had, it was like a railway sleeper, and he was just kind of timing it. And poor old Trevor Penny, it was like a flipping assault course for him feeding this chap balls. It was hilarious. He really earned his money that day.
Yeah, I mean, the mitt, and to be good with a mitt is massively important, especially in throwdowns. And because you're absolutely right, these guys muller it without even meaning to. And I think we've got a session and an online course coming up with a very well-known player. And the people that watched that session said that they couldn't believe how hard he hit the ball, considering he didn't look like he was trying to hit it hard. And, you know, I've had a couple from that particular player that have come back to me at a rate of knots, and you've got to be good with a mitt. Otherwise, you're going to spend a lot of time in hospital.
I can back that. I was there. I was there when he was hitting some pull shots into the side wall at the indoor school, and they were coming back just as hard as they hit the wall. They didn't seem to slow down at all off that wall.
Yeah, no, they hit the ball hard, and a mitt is massively important.
Yeah, and you have to learn how to use that as well, don't you? That's not something.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, it's practice, you know, and it's an easy thing to do to pick it up.
So these kind of things are exciting. Of course, we don't want to forget about the classic old fashioned thing. You know, you can't beat a bunch of cones for flexibility. But is there any other tools in your toolbox now that you didn't have, say, 5 years ago, Gareth?
Well, yeah, the Fusion Skyr, I think, is a great bit of kit for somebody because it gives you power, but doesn't, if you're trying to give catches to people, it gives you the power without having to substitute the accuracy. So that's massively important for me. And whether it's close catching or whether it's banging the ball out to a boundary 100 yards away, you know, it just gives you that extra bit of control that you wouldn't get out of a normal cricket bat. So that's always in my bag. And the other things that I have are catch-it ramps, because people love using catch-it ramps, and also fielding nets as well. So I've got a couple of fielding nets in my bag, and you can use that for obviously fielding practices, but also I get guys to do sweeps into them, and then it contains the practice. So there's lots of little things, and you don't have to have a big buff around, which is fantastic. They just make your coaching job a lot easier and give more options to the players that you're working with.
Bernice, what kind of things do you work with when you have your pre-game warm-ups? Any of those toys in the bag?
10-pint jug of Bulmers.
Yeah.
That'll do me. Now, what do we use? We play a bit of football. We have a few of the stumps, the peg stumps that kind of flap around that we can throw the ball into, and we have a mitt in a couple of the Skyr bats, but... No, I think, you know, stuff like that evolves in cricket, but it's still quite a simple game, isn't it? You know, you still need the ball and you've got to use your hands and your eyes with whatever you're doing. So there's only so much people can do, but we'll see where it all goes, I guess.
Yeah, my philosophy when it comes to any kind of coaching aid is that does it enhance whatever it is you're trying to do without getting in the way? If it tries to be too clever... there's no point. There's some things out there which I think you could do just as easily, you know, with a bit of chalk. Yeah. So why not just use the chalk?
I saw a probably going on from that a real basic piece of kit, and one that was used to good effect with some of the Essex guys, is they put like this a foam square piece of rubber above off stump, which kind of just hooks onto off stump. And is showing the bowler exactly the region that he should hit, and they actually change the dimensions of it. So it starts off probably about, oh, I don't know, maybe 50 centimeters square, and they can literally whittle it down to about 20 meters square. So it gives, you know, a real good kind of target for hitting just on top of off. And I know Chris Silverwood uses that, and he carries it around with him. And it's a bit like a swimming float that you use, one of those... buoyancy aid kind of things, but I don't know if you've ever seen that, Gareth.
I have, and it's a, you know, again, it's just going back to David's point about today, are enhancing, you know, they're very simple bits of kit. You know, a cricket bat with some rubber on the front that makes the ball go higher and more accurate is a good piece of kit for a practice. The thing that goes on the top of off stump, it's good, it's just good practice, it's good habits, and it certainly isn't detrimental. But I agree with David, there are a lot of things on the market which you look at and you just think, you know, it's nice, but does it actually make a massive difference to what you're doing? But fortunately, the things that we've mentioned today do.
Okay, now it's time on the show to catch up with Gary Palmer. He's continuing with his interview with us. And this week we learn a little bit more about coaching batting. Find that there's people who are quicker to pick up on what you're saying than others?
Yeah, some people look, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's part of being talented, I think. When you say something to someone and they just straight away go digest it and do it, you think, well, I can work with this person. It won't take me long to give them a good batting technique. The rest is down to all the other things like the mental strength, being under pressure, courage, all that sort of stuff. It's like when people talk about cricket is 90% in the head. Well, yes, it is. That's taken into account that we've already got a really good technique. You've got to have a really good basic technique, and then you go into, you know, into your matches, it is about 90% in the head. But if you haven't got a very good technique, it's obviously more about technique then rather than what's in the head. But you've got to get that technique in order first. That is the most important. Technique, 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 technique. You cannot underestimate. You've got to be working at it all the time. And when you say someone looks like they're a natural player, for me, the word natural means they're doing it correctly. You see some players and people say, oh, lad over there is overcoached. I say, what's overcoached? You cannot get enough of good coaching. But when a player looks robotic and overcoached, that's generally a player that really hasn't got it anyway, sort of natural hand-eye coordination. Maybe they've had some very, very good coaching that's got them to a level, and it's always going to look robotic. But or you've got somebody and they've been badly coached. Again, it all looks robotic. But good coaching with someone who's talented, you cannot get enough of it. And in this country, generally, people are undercoached. They're not overcoached. There's not enough prescriptive coaching out there. There's not enough of people saying the same thing. There's too many different things coming in. You know, bad coaching, it was also lots of different messages. Very difficult for a young lad when there's lots of different coaches firing in lots of pieces of information. Who do you listen to? That's a real problem in cricket. In this day and age, everybody should know exactly how you play an on drive, a straight drive, and an off drive, both front and back foot. Every single coach that goes on a course should know that, and it should be exactly the same. How good would that be for keeping it nice and simple for coaches and also for players? Really, really simple. But unfortunately, who am I to say this, right? But in the textbook, there are things in the textbook that have been the same for years and years and years and years, when if you look at some of the greatest players in the world, they all have some common denominators that are slightly different to the textbook. And my question would be, why are we not analysing that? And why are we not coaching that? You know, Tendulkar hits the ball with both feet pointed down a wicket. Is that part of him being a great player? Because he's got the most efficient way to be balanced and aligned. Well, that's part of it, definitely. Yeah, you know, we're teaching players to keep our back heel on the ground when we play a straight drive. Well, it's no wonder they tip to the offside and play around the front pad. It's what it says in the textbook. But in reality, it's not what the great players do. So, I think the textbook needs to be looked at and refined. And, you know, when people say, oh, he's too much textbook. Well, if textbook is all written correctly and is right, that's good. But if the textbook isn't, then obviously that's not so good.
You were talking about how it's cricket is 90% mental, and that reminded me of something that Richie Beno said once about captaincy, which is that it's 90% luck, but don't try and be a captain without that 10% of skill. So I think that's probably the same thing as what you're saying there.
Yeah.
But if we talk about perfect technique for a second, and you mentioned as well that it's very important for a coach to know what perfect technique looks like. But these days, it's a lot of coaching courses that coaches can go on. If indeed the coach has even been on a course, they don't teach perfect technique. So how does a coach go about learning what that perfect image is? How do they get that into their memory bank?
If you were in a net with me and I wanted to teach you to coach, and I'm going to do this in future, start a mentoring system. So every time I do a one-to-one with a player, a coach pays a fee, comes along and spends 3 hours, and I try and guide him on the methods that I use and the techniques that I'm implementing. And I would visually show them, this is the shape, whether it's on a picture or it's you actually shadowing and showing the shape. It's as simple as that. This is what it looks like. It's a visual thing, isn't it? So I think a lot of people digest stuff. Audio and visually, you learn it. And it's with feel that you execute it.
So talking more about perfect technique and helping coaches learn about what perfect technique looks like. I know that you're doing a session with coaches associations around the UK at the moment where coaches can come along and see that the way that you do things and the way that you establish that foundation of technique. So what's involved in that?
Well, through all my years of coaching, I've come up with what I think is a really, really simple method of constructing technique. Not just constructing it, enhancing it, challenging it, assessing it. And it comes in the form of a one-to-one, or it could be a coach to three or four players on a bowling machine in a net, where you have a system of four angles and swings, which is very logical and very progressive. And the system, the angles and swings are delivered in such a way that a batsman or woman is lured into maintaining good alignment and good balance throughout all the angles until you get to the last one. So you learn to play on drive, straight drive, and everything's focusing around your head staying wicket to wicket and your feet being nicely aligned. And without giving too much away at this point, the last angle you do is the machine over the wicket swinging away, which is the one angle when your head does go across a little bit more to play an off drive. But generally when we see coaching, machines always over the wicket swinging the ball away. So the head's always going across to the offside. So you play a nice off drive. But when the ball's straight, you're tipping over and playing around your front pad. And every time I do a one-to-one with anyone, I start off with my same sequence of angles every time. And it is a really, really quick way to get someone into really good nick with a bat, really good technique. And I'm talking alignment and balance. Because I believe if for a technique to be watertight and a really good skill, you have to be efficient on all four angles and all four swings. And if you've got an imperfection on one angle and swing, that's great, because we had a little flaw, which we may not have identified before. Then we can go back and hit that same angle all the time after the session, iron out the fault. Suddenly our technique's working all round the wicket, over, round, in swing, out swing. And if you can do that well, that would lead you into playing spin well. So, you know, this could be done in a one-to-one environment or as a squad with four bowling machines, four people per net, and you just go through the four sequences and four swings. Great way to tune your players up pre-season. Great way to give them a check-up halfway through the season. Great way to construct technique really, really quickly. Great way to assess where there are deficiencies in the technique. Great way to challenge it. And for me, it is just so, so simple. Four angles, four swings, bang, bang, bang. It could be 15 minutes an angle and swing, or 20 or half an hour, whatever you want it to be, bearing in mind what time you have, you know, to execute the practice. But every time I do a one-to-one, I do it. And it works. It works so simply every single time. I know people use bowling machines from different angles, but most of the time that's because next week they're playing against a left arm seamer. Therefore, they want to practice left arm swing, ball coming into them from some left arm over the wicket. But my sequence of angles is purely about constructing, enhancing, challenging and assessing technique. And it's all about, you've got ABC, alignment, balance and completion of shot. You've got to be monitoring that from all four angles and swings. And if a player can play really well in the V against all those angles and swings, they are definitely going to be well balanced and aligned. And they're in a very, very good position and place to then play spin bowling from. And, you know, at some point we're going to, I think we're going to put the, some video clips on the batting page, on my batting page, where we'll show this visually happening on video from each angle. We'll talk people through what we're doing and why we're doing it. And we'll do it with a player and they'll be able to see the outcome. And I think that's a very powerful tool for any coach anywhere to go and sort of try out on one of their players. You could nearly gag yourself and say nothing, and just the angles in the swings in the progression without any input verbally, the player would get better. And again, and to do this session well, you would have to implement some of the techniques that I talk about that are slightly different to the textbook and what we're coached. You know, I want to see a bloke in a position to play a straight drive at a ball that is starting outside off stump, swinging in to be straight, or starting outside leg stump. So the ball's arriving in the same place, but you could, with the same body position, you can hit both balls well. So that could be a ball that nips in or nips away, and you're well equipped to deal with it. And for me, it's the ultimate technical batting session.
Time now for the question section on the show. And as you know, every week, if you send in a question, you get a chance to win a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So Berners has got the questions this week. What's in the mailbag, Berners?
Okay, very topical question here that's coming from Bree Wardle. Bree's, as a lot of players do in the off-season, is using a bowling machine to help him just stay in nick and feel like he's feeling that ball onto the bat. And he's saying that he feels like his feet are glued to the floor, which is often a byproduct of using the bowling machine. He said the operator often varies line length and pace, so it's not the same delivery he's facing every ball to try and emulate a real game situation. And he just wants to know, firstly, is this kind of training a good idea? Also, he's premeditating his shots. So it sounds to me like he's certainly having a good time against the bowling machine, but what good it's is doing remains to be seen. So maybe you can give him a little bit of advice there, coach.
From my point of view, the way that I've found the bowling machine works best is when you do it to you use it to groove a particular shot. So you know what the ball is going to be coming out of the machine to the vast majority of the time. You know, if you're working on your on drive, you're working on your on drive with the bowling machine. And the reason why that works best for a bowling machine is because you don't get the clues from the bowler. You don't have the time necessarily to be able to judge the line and length and then play the shot, and that's why people get stuck a little bit when they're facing a bowling machine where there's a lot of variation in line and length and pace. So the machine is, for me anyway, is more for grooving particular shots. There are times when that's not the case, but in the vast majority of cases, I'd say the best use of it is when you're working on a particular shot and you want to have something that's a little bit more than a throwdown. What do you think, Gareth?
I think yeah, grooving is the best thing for bowling machines. There's some really interesting research that's being built at the moment around the effectiveness of bowling machines, full stop. And the early indications are that they're very limited in their positive effect, and that throwdowns, because there's natural variation from a thrower. We talked about the sidearm, for example. It gives that natural variation, which means that you react to the ball rather than react to where you think the ball is going to be, which is actually it's a real way of playing cricket and practicing cricket. So yeah, I'd agree, grooving's great, but you need to then, once you've got the grooving done, you need to take it into an open environment, which is what batting's about. Batting is an open environment. You react to stimulus. And the trouble with bowling machines is there's no physical stimulus to get your timing, to get your movements from. So I'd agree with you. There are ways of doing it where you can get that variation in, but it requires highly skilled operation for that, because otherwise it can be really dangerous. And one of the ways that we've done it at top level is to just unscrew the head of the bowling machine a little bit, so it gives you that natural ability to move it around rather than doing it off of the controls. But I mean, that's really top end stuff, and you need to be a good player and a very good coach to be able to do that. So not something I'd really advocate. But the last thing I would say is the really light balls that you get from bowler now.
Yeah.
Give you that natural variation. So they are slightly lighter, which means that they will be affected by the spin of the wheels slightly differently. And as a result, you can get differences in variation of length, which means that it's a decent practice. So if you are going to use it for stimulate your senses and being able to move in, then I would encourage to use these lighter balls. And also, if you get it slightly wrong, it doesn't hurt because they're not as solid.
So would you say, certainly at club level, I think there's a movement, much more of a movement towards bowling machines than there was, say, 10, 15 years ago. Would you say at higher levels, at first class and international level, that there's more of a movement away from the bowling machine?
I think there's a slightly different use of bowling machines.
Right.
I would say at the top level. So they're still used, and the Merlin bowling machines get used a heap of time now. You know, the spin bowling machines get used loads because they are a fantastic resource to have. But it's how you use them. You know, so if you want to practice coming down the wicket to somebody who's spinning the ball away, which isn't an easy task, then you know, you can hit hundreds of balls, which is that grooving thing again. But you'll find most players will groove and then they'll go straight into an open environment. So whether that be the nets to practice what they've grooved, or whether it be against a guy throwing with a sidearm, or whatever the case may be, because that is the acid test. That is the test that you want to be able to react to the stimulus of a ball coming down. You want to have correct reactions to that stimulus of a ball being bowled. So if it's a half volley outside off stump, I want to be able to fall into the positions that I need to be able to hit that half volley as well as I can. If it's a good length ball that needs to get worked down to third man, then I need to do exactly the same.
So I think what we're saying in your typical club net situation is that you have the machine there and you're doing your grooving on it. But then once you've done that, you go into the net where there is the bowler or the guy giving you throwdown. So you can do a few minutes of that as well and get the best of both.
Yeah, you have to test it. I mean, there's no point in grooving a skill and then not testing it because then just testing it in a game. Because if you test it in a game and you fail, you're out. So what you need to do is to get the grooving right and then take it into a net situation or a throwdown situation, get it right there, know that it works, and then you can take it with confidence into the match.
Okay, we've got a question here regarding the cover drive. How can you get the most out of your cover drives? What's the best way to play the cover drive? And when should I not play them? So it sounds like we've got a cover drive whore here, coach. So maybe you can assist him a little bit with his shot selection.
I'm going to be writing in one of the weeks about a drill, which is about getting your weight on your front foot when you practice. And the best cover drivers in the world and the most controlled cover drivers have more of their weight on their front foot rather than having sitting back in the drive, which is what you see a lot of people do, which enables the ball then to squirt off and go through cover, not through extra cover, but through point. Whereas the best drivers of a ball will generally hit the ball either side of extra cover and mid-off. So on the front foot, more your head over the top of your knee will enable you to have more control because you can wait for the ball to come to you and strike the ball down the ground. So that would be the first thing to do. And one-legged drills, which you can read about on the site, will be a really good starting point for you to develop that cover drive and make that cover drive a position of strength rather than an area of development at the moment.
Yeah, I think cover drive is a wonderful shot, but it's also a shot that can get you into a bit of trouble sometimes as well, especially if you're batting at the top of the order and there's a guy swinging the ball around a little bit, and you know, if the ball's doing a little bit, then you can be trying to unleash your cover drive a little bit too early. So it's hard to have a hard and fast rule, but maybe early in your innings you want to have a little look before you decide to start smashing it through the covers. Obviously, if there's a half volley there, you don't want to ignore it, but it's one of those shots that can get people into trouble, especially if your balance isn't quite right. You can end up looking for the cover drive because it's one of your favourite shots, And then you get the ball that's a bit straighter and you're wrapped on the pad, or it swings back in and you're wrapped on the pad because you're overbalancing. So making sure that your balance is right, and making sure that you have a look before you go straight into playing those cover drives. Because so many times I see playing in the club game, so many times I see the player looking for that shot early on and getting caught on the crease and getting hit on the pad because they end up the ball straighter than they thought it was, and they end up playing around their pad.
But that goes back to me about being in the here and now rather than forward projecting, because you've got, you know, that's coming in and looking for a certain ball to score off of, you know, instead of actually reacting. And the best players react, they see the ball and they move to what that ball is telling them that it needs to be moved to. So, you know, if it is a half volley outside of something, they'll move into it. If it's a length ball straight, then they'll move into it. If it's a bounce, they get under, then they'll get under it. Because, you know, you need to be thinking about the here and the now at any given point. The second thing I'd say is when things go wrong, it can be one of two things. It's either shot selection or it's shot execution. And a lot of the time that I see these things, it isn't necessarily the shot selection that's wrong, it's his shot execution. So the ball might be there, and even if it is swinging, if you play the ball in the correct fashion when the ball's swinging, it actually opens up for that cover drive nicely. If you've got your weight over your front foot, if you play the ball late, so the face of the bat is facing down towards the ground rather than towards the fielder, then even if the ball's swinging, it actually opens up that gap nicely for you. So again, I'd go back to drills. Get your drills right. Get your front foot drive right. And it doesn't matter whether the ball's swinging or not. It means that you can dominate from start of the game. Because if the ball's swinging, a guy wants to be pitching the ball up to give it as much chance to swing. If you can dominate that length, then fantastic.
That's all we've got time for this week on the show. But before we go, as we always do, we're going to choose a winner for the competition, which is a competition to win a online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Gareth, who do you think should win the prize this week?
My favourite question for this week came from Brian. It was about bowling. And again, I think that's a really important one. So hopefully there's some good tips in there for you.
Congratulations to you. And if you're listening and you haven't sent in a question and you are thinking to yourself, well, I fancy winning an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy, then you can certainly do so if you send in your question to us. The ways to get in touch with us are many and varied, including our telephone number, which is 0208 816 7691. And Gareth, you know what the email address is, don't you?
Yes, it's coach@pitchvision.com.
You can also get us on Facebook, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and you can find us on Twitter under PV Cricket Coach, where we're hanging out tweeting there. If you want to find us in iTunes, you can go into iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and subscribe to get the podcast delivered to you every week. And if you don't use iTunes, then you can go to pitchvision.com and find the feed to the show to put into any podcast reader that you like. That's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Thanks, Gareth.
Thanks, David. And thanks, Berners.